The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 Podcast.
We welcome you back, and it's great to have all of you here for the second half of the program. This is March, and while everyone is focused on the upcoming NCAA basketball tournament, perhaps the most important moment of this month from a sports standpoint could be in Washington, D.C. at the Supreme Court. That's when the much-heralded landmark, potentially landmark case will be heard, oral arguments will be heard. And there's a lot of controversy going on right now. And our next guest is going with Michael McMahon has shed some light on that. A friend of the court brief, an amicus brief, was filed recently in this case, the NCAA versus Alston. And it was discovered by our next guest and his colleague that what these athletes have done may end up hurting the cause more than helping it. Daniel Libet joining us, and it's really great to have you on, Daniel. Thank you so much. We've talked in the past with Michael McCann, and both of you have really uncovered quite an extraordinary story here. Good afternoon, and in as gentle way possible, explain to those of us who don't understand this stuff as well as you what this is all about.
Well, first of all, thanks so much for having me on the program. It's an honor. As you sort of previewed, there was a group of former college athletes who on February 8th filed an amicus brief, which is also called a friend of the court brief, in the NCAA v. Alston case. This was the eighth amicus brief that was filed in this case, but it was probably the most interesting and possibly the most impactful because this was the only brief that was being written and signed off on by actual former college athletes. Others who had weighed in on this were economists and law professors and subject matter experts, but these are, you know, ostensibly the people who would have been impacted by changes to the restrictions in compensation or scholarship limits while they were still in school. And they were voicing their support for the NCAA, which was also kind of interesting because the caption of the case is the NCAA v. Alston. Alston is Sean Alston, the former West Virginia running back, who's the name on a class of former college athletes. And so, you know, curious, who are the athletes who are actually standing up for the NCAA? And so a couple of weeks ago, I started calling around and reaching out to the 18 athletes who had signed off on this brief. Two-thirds of them are former Olympic athletes, but six of them are former major sports athletes. Five of them played basketball in college, and one of them is Darren McFadden, the star football player for Arkansas, who had a 10-year NFL career and retired in 2017. And those are the ones who I thought were most interesting because those are the ones from the revenue, the so-called revenue-generating sports, who you'd think would have the most to gain by changes to the restrictions of compensation. And in calling around, particularly with McFadden, who was kind of the marquee name, he was by far and away the most high profile of the former college athletes to sign on to this brief. It occurred to me in our conversations with a few of them, McFadden included, that their words didn't exactly square with what the brief said. That when I was asking them sort of what motivated their position on the issue of amateurism or what led them to join in on this brief, they were kind of making better arguments for the plaintiffs, for the players, for the Alston side than they were for the NCAA. And then through additional reporting and you know, continuing to interview them, it really raised questions of whether or not they knew exactly what they were signing on to in the first place and whether or not their perspectives on college sports and amateurism aligned with the NCAA at all. The law firm that filed this brief is a major international law firm. It's called Orrick. They've done work previously for the NCAA. So this was a serious brief filed by a serious group of lawyers, but it seemed like some of their key voices and their biggest and most high-profile name didn't know what they were actually signing up for or really didn't understand the specifics or for that matter, the overriding point of the litigation.
Yeah, Daniel, not to turn this into a legal drama, but you know, maybe in a small town, a lawyer runs down to the courthouse on Friday and files something quickly just to try to stave something off or for a quick injunction. But we're talking about the Supreme Court here and one of the most important cases that we've ever seen in relation to the NCAA. How does something like this happen?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. And, you know, I reached out to a law firm which pushed back strongly and vehemently against any kind of suggestion that the brief was anything other than fully representative of all of the athletes who signed on to it. But yeah, your point is exactly right. This is a very serious case. You know, this is probably the biggest college sports case to go before the Supreme Court in a quarter century. And these are serious lawyers who filed the brief, and you'd think that they would be able to, you know, gather together a group of former athletes who really had a full understanding and appreciation of their side. I think one thing that might suggest is how difficult it might be for the NCAA's position to find support among former major or major sport or you know, so-called revenue sport athletes. And that seems to be where the sticking point is. I spoke with other people who signed onto the brief who were Olympic sport athletes, who were much more articulate and sort of informed on the points of what the brief was saying and what the NCAA's position is. But it does somewhat undermine the argument that you know, there's a wide swath of diverse group of athletes who support the NCAA, that it's not just the Olympic sport athletes who don't want necessarily the floodgates of new compensation to come in, but that there are actually people who played football and basketball who also subscribe to that thinking as well.
Daniel, let me go back to McFadden, who, you know, is one of the great running backs in modern SEC and college football history. You know, somebody that had quite a career after he left. Can you articulate a little bit more on, or expand a little more on what he thought he was doing here?
Yeah, well, it was sort of interesting. His name was obviously the most intriguing name, because for anybody who's followed this issue, his name has never been associated with amateurism, at least publicly. So when we saw his name on this brief, me and other people who followed it, it was like, oh, Darren McFadden is now stepping forward. And interestingly, he's stepping forward in support of the NCAA, aside from the fact that he was such a successful college football player and had a serious NFL career as well. What made him even more intriguing is that he was the cover athlete in the EA Sports NCAA 2009 football game. Now, that in and of itself kind of ties more neatly to the Ed O'Bannon case and the issue of name, image, and likeness, which this case is separate from. But still, if you're kind of thinking about this globally as somebody who's lending support for the NCAA in this ongoing battle over amateurism and athlete compensation, it was quite a coup to get somebody like Darren McFadden on your side. And so I reached out to him through various sources and contacts to try to get a hold of him and spoke to him on the phone last week. And it really was, he just really evinced a lack of understanding of what this case was about. I initially asked him, I said, you know, Darren, what got you interested in amateurism, or what was your experience as a college athlete that informed your position today? And he talked about when he was at Arkansas and being an all-SEC player and yet still unable to afford a $50 parking ticket. And I said, well, Darren, that's an interesting point, but that almost seems to be more a point in the favor of the Alston side, who's arguing that athletes are being deprived of their financial rights through the violation of the U.S. antitrust statutes. And from that point on, most of our conversation was just him saying, well, you know, this is just my opinion. you know, I really haven't studied up on this. I don't know about all the different court cases and so forth going on. And while it's true that amicus curiae often are not intimately familiar with the legal arguments, they're not always lawyers, it was still striking that, you know, the one expression he gave to me of what was informing his position seemed to be in complete diametrics to the side he was technically representing. And so I, you know, just double checked. I reached out to a source that was close to him that who had also spoken to him about his involvement in this and who more or less confirmed that he was pretty unaware of what this all was about, that he had been reached out to by somebody in the Arkansas Athletics Department initially and kind of got his name passed along and really wasn't clear on what this case was about before he lent his name to it.
Hmm. Daniel, before you go, and this is fabulous reporting and really quite extraordinary to think about. In terms of what is argued in 4 weeks, I mean, there is not a lot of time to make oral arguments in front of the nine justices. What do you think the NCAA's most critical point is going to be when they make the argument?
Well, I mean, their argument all along is that their set of rules are carefully calibrated to maintain amateurism in the current world that we live in, and that any kind of more dramatic eating away of those rules, opening up the market to at least college athletes, because clearly the market is fully available to coaches and administrators in college athletics, is going to just knock this off its axis and sort of be the end of college sports as we know it. And in the cascade of that, there's going to be the elimination of all kinds of opportunities for college athletes who aren't, you know, football and men's basketball players, and that this is going to end up harming a lot more athletes than it will end up helping by giving opportunities for schools to give greater benefits through their grant and aid scholarships to the players that they have. That's been the NCAA's argument for a while. I don't know that there's anything else that they can more or less argue. I mean, what was compelling about this amicus brief was that it was at least being supported by a different kind of audience. It's usually the NCAA and the institutions of college sports versus the players, and this is at least trying to suggest that there is a diversity of interests among athletes. There's a lot more athletes who play college sports than just who play FBS football or top men's basketball or women's basketball, and that their needs also need to be accounted for. So I think that point will be made whether or not this brief ultimately has lost its luster on account of some of the things we reported or if the NCAA just simply thinks that there's better things to argue along is left to be seen. But, you know, the arguments today are really the arguments that the NCAA has been making for years now.
Daniel Libet from Sportico. Yeah, something tells me McFadden will not be sitting with the lawyers at the table when they make this argument. Great to have you on. Really looking forward to hearing more as we get closer and obviously in 4 weeks. Thank you. Tremendous job.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Wow, that was really amazing. It just shows you what some good reporting can do. And, you know, how the NCAA can be that incompetent is beyond me, but why are we surprised? Let's take a break. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. Said Golden at the bottom of the hour on how Sark is working out in Texas and the baseball coach of the number one team in the country right around the corner as well.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Back on the program on a Tuesday afternoon. Basketball coming up a little bit later. Mickey is in Kentucky. Hello, Mickey.
Hi, Paul.
Hi there.
I just wanted to tell you a little story about Kaywood Ledford.
Oh, sure.
When back in the Adolph Rupp days, Tennessee doubled the size of Stokely Athletic Center. And in doing so, they moved the announcers from the side of the court to the upper level of the new addition.
Right.
And I used to listen to Adolph and Kaywood all the time, the pre-show. And Kaywood would complain on this particular Kentucky-Tennessee game that he couldn't even see the floor, and there was a post in front of him. And he complained the whole time. But then when the game started, he could see every Tennessee foul from
That's
his
great.
Seat, but he could never see a Kentucky foul. And I
remember that, Paul. I used to sit up there as a student. It blocked out objectivity.
Well, fortunately, they built a new arena.
They did. But by the way, Kaywood was one of the all-timers, as you well know.
Yeah, and Louisville had a clear channel radio, so even when I would travel to Cleveland.
I remember that station.
And I could hear Kaywood talking even in Cleveland. So it was.
Well, I appreciate that, Mickey. Early in my career, I was covering games in Auburn or Alabama or somewhere else. So, I mean, there were always 2-3 hour drives at night, and you know. I know this will sound like a big surprise. This was before satellite radio, iPhones, Apple Music. So you literally combed the dial, and you could get, if you were near a city, you could get the local stations. But if you were out in the hinterlands, and all due respect to my love of Alabama, but you drive back from Auburn, Alabama, there are a lot of hinterlands. And your best shot was, jumping on WWL in New Orleans. What was the station in Cleveland? 3WE, WHAS in Louisville, KDK out of Pittsburgh you could get. There were five or six stations that you could get as if you were sitting outside the radio station, and you might be listening to a Cleveland Cavaliers game or an LSU basketball game or UK, but you at least had something. And, you know, for a 3-hour drive at midnight, it kept a lot of people company. But that's what we're talking about here. And I know a lot of you young folks have no idea what we're talking about, but that's what we're talking about. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Jeff is up next in Columbus, Ohio. And I tell you what, I think I saw the Phoenix rising from the ashes, because I don't think we've heard from Jeff since January 11th. Good afternoon, Jeff.
What's going on, Paul?
Welcome back to the I know that 28 point or whatever, I can't remember how big a beatdown it was tough on you, but thanks for kind of dusting yourself off.
Hey, I tried to call in the next day, but you ran me off, Paul.
Well, you were pretty arrogant. You were
so
pretty
right away. I mean,
you weren't exactly gracious.
I called in the next day.
Yeah.
Huh?
You were not quite as gracious as you were on January 2nd of 2015, when you were running your mouth about Ohio State beating Alabama.
Well,
that
who
time.
Would be, Paul? We're all competitors, man. Who would be?
Well, they're, you know, I don't know about you, but maybe when I grew up playing ball, they always taught you to show some class when you lost.
Hey, I called in and complimented Alabama, but you just wanted to play to your base and stir it up. I know how it goes. Hey, speaking of calling in, how's it come you won't let Jim call in anymore? I heard that Texas A&M basketball coach basically begging for Jim to call in, and you basically told him you'll run your own show. What's going on?
Well,
I appreciate you. You use him on your promos.
I appreciate you being a counsel for the downtrodden, but who's saying that he's called in?
I don't know. I'm just asking the question.
Well,
it sure sounded to me like you don't want him to call in.
All I'm saying is to get on the show, you have to call in.
Okay, so you'll let him on the air if he calls in?
I just simply said to get on the show, you have to call in.
Okay, so you're not going to answer the question.
Well, I don't know what the answer is because, you know.
If you're not going to let somebody call in, why do you use their voice on a promo? I don't get it.
Well, first of all, I'm not trying to pass the buck here, but I am not in charge of doing the promos.
I mean, plus, if you let Jim call in, you'll get Squirrel and I-Man back. You know that.
Well, besides, I think we did let, if I remember correctly, he said some utterly unforgivable things back in the fall. He did call in on the, I think it was on New Year's Eve when we had the Archbishop on from Rome, and I felt maybe it would do all of us some good to forgive and forget and show some redemption. But I don't believe he's called in since.
Okay, I just wonder because I just don't get it. I mean, it'd just be good to get to ramp it up a little bit.
I don't know how to make it any clearer to you, but I think I have. So I'll let you move on to another subject.
Well,
assuming you have.
You let him on the air.
I don't believe I'm under oath here, Jeff, to give you whatever. I've already answered your question.
I didn't think I was asking you to solve a chemistry problem or anything. I think it was just a yes or no question.
Well,
I wouldn't try to stir any problems up. I mean, it's just simple.
I hate to do this, Jeff, but you have just blabbered your way right to the bottom of the hour, and we have a guest waiting. So thank you for that just simply stupefying call. Very sapient. We'll take a break. More to come. Cedric Golden is on deck, and we look forward to chatting with him.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Great to have all of you back here. Final hour and a half of our program on a Tuesday afternoon. Always fun for me to have our next guest on. Cedric Golden is one of the great columnists in America. I've had the opportunity to be on his podcast a couple of times. And as we say hello to you, Cedric, I just want you to know the eyes of Texas are upon you.
I knew you were going to go there, Paul. Let's get right on it.
Yeah, well, first of all, I'm glad everybody in Texas can hear and see and has power back on, but we'll leave that for the news channels. But it's great to have you on. And I cannot explain the controversy as well as you can. You live it, you understand it. So for those who may have seen a tweet about the latest, which is seems like it's ongoing, what is going on right now?
Well, first of all, former Texas safety Caden Stearns, a three-year starter, he tweeted out that he and some teammates were threatened and told that they wouldn't be able to find employment in Texas if they kept on protesting this Eyes of Texas, which, has perceived racist origin. So basically the donors, he said, are the ones doing the threatening. My question to that is, why are you protecting them? Why don't you just tell us who it is? I know where I'm from, Paul. The best way to confront a bully is to hit him in the mouth, and then let the chips fall where they may. So do we know if these are whales-type donors, millionaires, billionaires, or are these the guys that are sleeping in mom's basement with, like, 7 Twitter followers? Who's to say?
Cedric, it's a controversy that keeps popping up. You know, where is the university on this right now? Or are they still where they were a couple of months ago?
That's a great question. I'm going to tell you, the first thing is when we, during Steve Sarkisian's introductory press conference, he was asked about the Eyes of Texas, and he goes, "That's our cool song, and our players are going to sing it proudly." And I was like, come again? It's just like that? It's all solved? So I don't know that that's the message that the university, I know they want them to sing it proudly, but I just don't think it's going to be that easy. Now, what they've done over the last month or so is they have they've instituted a comprehensive study of the song, its origins, what it means to them. They're going to release those findings next week, and I'm sure that's going to be just a whole big ball of laughs, because I guess they're just going to let everyone draw their conclusions. I don't know what good's going to come of it. I do know that there's still going to be division in that locker room. This issue is going to move into the recruiting areas, where why wouldn't a rival school go well, you know, to a black kid? Well, you know they're going to make you sing that racist song over there. Those kind of things happen, Paul. So I just think it's just a real mess. Nothing has really been solved from the summer or from the last couple of months, and I just think it's going to continue to be an issue. They took racist names off of buildings. They donated to black causes. They named the football field after their Heisman Trophy winners, Earl Campbell and Ricky Williams, two black men. They erected a statue of Julius Whittier in the stadium, the first black letterman. They've done some things that the players kind of wanted them to do. But like I told you months ago, and I'll tell you again today, man, that song's not going anywhere.
Said there was a famous Supreme Court case. It was about obscenity, and Justice Potter Stewart said in looking at a film, I know it when I see it, meaning I don't need a friend of the court brief to tell me whether that's obscene or not. Wouldn't the same logic or application apply to whether something is racist or not?
Yeah, but it's all in the eyes of the beholder. The people who are supporting this song insist that it's a song of unity. They go, I'm not thinking about racism when I sing that song. But the question is, what were the people thinking when they wrote it? And so I've been told by prominent Texas athletes that the song was racist. They believed it to be racist. That they believed when he says, The eyes of Texas are upon you. You cannot get away. That it was directed at slaves who were trying to run away. I mean, that's been told to me so many times I've lost count. So I believe that the people nowadays who don't have racism in their hearts, they when they sing that song, they have a love of their school and all of that. But to me, does it really mean that it's not racist? If something is offensive to another human being and it offends them, I think as a fellow human, you need to take a look at it and examine why it's offensive to them instead of just rubber stamping it and says, well, it doesn't mean that to me. Because if it's racist to another person you respect, I would think that you would take a look at it.
Said, it is a fact. The top players in the state of Texas this year went to Alabama, went to Clemson, Ohio State. So we don't need to debate. Players are leaving that state and not going to what many people used to consider the preeminent football school. But does this have anything to do with that? And I realize some of those players are white too. But overall, what impact is this having, if any, on recruiting?
Over the years, I don't think it's had anything to do with it. They're just not winning, Paul. They're not winning. They're on their third coach in 8 years. And that just doesn't happen at these major programs. I think the fact that Texas is not winning games, a four-loss season counts for as a great season to them now. They finished ninth when they won that Sugar Bowl, but people forget that was a four-loss team. So if you're winning, because I'll use this as an example. Texas A&M, they during the offseason, they had some turmoil on that campus with some of the locals. The kids wanted the Jefferson Davis statue, I believe, taken down off campus. And there was literally a standoff between some football players and some locals. And one of the football players was the quarterback, Kellen Mond. And so those things were happening all over the country. Now, spring forward through the fall, and the Aggies have their best season since Johnny Manziel left. And they finished number four in the country. People aren't talking about Jefferson Davis anymore. They're talking about trying to make a run at the Crimson Tide next year. So I think that winning is a panacea. I know that this is a very important issue, but issues like this, Paul, are magnified when you're in the midst of a mediocre run as a program. Texas is a big dog in the area of merchandising and making money and the Longhorn Network, but you don't mention Texas anymore when you're talking about Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, LSU. Texas isn't even the best team, best program in its own state anymore, and that's the underlying problem. These issues are like the eyes of Texas are very important, but they're also going to be magnified when it's just juxtaposed with the frustrations of a fan base of a losing program.
Cedric Golden from the Austin American Statement. Cedric, thank you as always. It's always one of our great pleasures to have you on. You be well. Take care of yourself.
You too, brother. Take care, Paul.
You got it. Oh, wow. No, this is not the reason Texas isn't winning, but it doesn't help the overall perception either. We will take a break. We still have the baseball coach of the number one program in the country coming up. Basketball, including Arkansas, a little bit later on. Your phone calls are next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
You're not worth a flip.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hey, welcome back. We appreciate you being here, and let's continue with more phone calls. And how about Brennan in Tuscaloosa? Hello, Brennan. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Paul. How are you doing?
I am doing great. What's up with you today?
Nothing, just enjoying life. My question for today was, how do you feel on Alabama's placement this from the end of the season this year in the bracket play?
Well, right now, Brendan, I'm sure you know, Alabama is projected as a 2. I don't think they can do anything to get higher than that. I mean, if they won tonight and Saturday and swept the SEC, you know, could they possibly get up there if you saw some of the Big Ten teams cannibalize themselves, or maybe a shocking, you know, another loss to Baylor or something. But right now they're pretty firmly entrenched at 2, which is a really good seed. You're a 2 seed, so you open the tournament against a 15, and then what would be the next one would be you play the 7-10. So you're, I mean, after the first round, it won't be easy, but you're in a really good spot.
I know that. I mean, we've had a great year, especially, you know, looking at Nate Oates when he's gone in just his second year, already getting us here, breaking records for our team.
Well, Brendan, you take care of yourself. We got a long month ahead to talk about Alabama basketball, and it's been exciting. Carl is up next in Kentucky. How are you, Carl?
Doing fine, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I called a couple of weeks ago. I'm a Vandy fan. I called on the day you interviewed Coach Lee, the new Vandy football coach.
Oh, right, yes.
Yes, but I'm calling today about a different topic since you were talking about broadcasters. My first name's Carl. Middle name is Kaywood, and Kaywood Ledford is my first cousin.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so, yeah, his parents were my mother's aunt and uncle, Aunt Sudie and Uncle Wash.
Well, let me briefly explain. Kaywood Ledford is the quintessential radio broadcaster. He did Kentucky games for you may have to tell me, but I know he left in the early 90s, but I've never heard a better basketball announcer.
Well, that's good to hear from you, because I feel that way, but I'm probably prejudiced.
No, not only did Kaywood Ledford do Kentucky, he was also the voice of the NCAA basketball tournament. I mean, he just had such a rich voice. And I remember when I covered a game at Rupp when I was in college, I would just kind of creep behind his broadcast situation at center court just to be near him. I did not know him. Maybe I may have said hello to him once or twice, but he was legendary and still is.
And the whole Kaywood family is from Harlan County, Kentucky.
Right.
That's where my mother grew up. And I'll answer a question a lot of people ask me. With that background, why did you go to Vanderbilt?
Well, so, I wasn't going to bring that up.
But the answer is my mother and also my dad grew up in, well, Harlan County, Kentucky, in my mother's case, and Southwest Virginia coal camps in dad's case. They couldn't afford to go to college, so they both ended up at Berea College.
Right.
And I don't know if you're
I spent a lot of time in East Tennessee. I'm very familiar with Harlan County.
Okay. I grew up in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, in East Tennessee, but that's another story. So,
well, I tell you one thing, you have a great degree. My wife has a degree from Vanderbilt, so you are she has to put up with the Tennessee graduate in the family.
Right. Well, I won't hold that against you, because back in my undergrad days, we had no kind words for UT, but I've since grown to support any team in the SEC. So I'm rooting for UT and Vandy and all the teams.
Well, Carl, I will tell you this here, because we're up against a break, but thank you. Your cousin, Kaywood, I mean, people still bring him up today. His last game, I believe, was in the 90, I think it was 92. I think he did the famous, I think his last game was the famous Christian Laettner buzzer beater, but that's almost 30 years ago, and we're still talking about him, which just shows the legacy of him. The head baseball coach at Arkansas. We had the basketball coach on the other day. Dave Van Horn has the number one team in the country, and he'll join us next.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.